On this International Holocaust Remembrance Day, we're going to hear about a brand new archive full of stories of Eastern European Jews offering some wonderfully illuminating details. Archivists assembled and digitized millions of documents thanks to a partnership between YIVO Institute of Jewish Research in New York City and a group of institutions in Lithuania. So what do the archives contain?
I can tell you in one word, tradition!
Yeah, that's right. The writings of Shalom Aleichem. His stories became Fiddler on the Roof. They also include Albert Einstein's letters, diary entries from the founder of modern Zionism, Theodor Herzl, even some Yiddish pornography. In other words, documentary evidence, both high and low, of everyday life in Jewish communities across Eastern Europe. Joining us now is Jonathan Brent. He's executive director of the YIVO Institute for Jewish Research and a professor at Bard College. Hello, Jonathan.
Very nice to be with you.
So tell us how this partnership came together. I can only imagine that it must have taken a lot of time and effort to yield this monumental archive.
When I got to YIVO in 2009, I discovered that part of our archive was in Lithuania and part of it was in our holdings in New York City. It had been separated by the war. In fact, a Lithuanian saved the material and protected it, and they safeguarded it from 1948 to 1991. And in the meantime, nobody was reading these materials. These materials were continuing to deteriorate in substandard conditions. That was extremely painful, you know, extremely difficult to accept. And because I had worked previously for almost 20 years in the Soviet archives, and the last part of which was digitizing Stalin's personal archive, I knew that digitization projects, international ones, could be done. I approached a friend of mine who was in the Lithuanian parliament, Emanuelis Zingaris, and I said, what do you think of the idea of our digitizing the material and forgetting at least for the time being, who owns it and where it should be and all of these other things, but saving it and making it usable. And he loved this idea. And that's how the project began.
Boy, what a great story. So let's talk a little bit about what's in the archives. I understand that it includes famous works of literature. What are some of your favorite things in this vast collection?
There are so many favorite things. Autobiographies of youth that were the product of three autobiography contests in the 1930s. There were originally about 600 of them, about 300 survived. These are extraordinary windows onto Jewish life in the interwar period. Some of these kids were Zionists, some of them were Bundists, some of them were communists, some of them were atheists, some of them hated their parents, some of them loved their parents, some of them were rich, some poor. And you get a complete picture of life, and they're in something like 8 or 9 different languages.
Wow.
And from as far away as Czechoslovakia and Russia and Poland and all over the Jewish world of Central and East Europe.
And tell us more about what these archives, what they teach us about that daily life. I love this idea, this sort of prosaic idea that you're getting a glimpse of daily life from all kinds of different people in that period.
Yes, from the rich to the poor, from the highest rabbis to the lowliest water carrier, from magnates to school children, from ne'er-do-wells to poets. And my father used to say that how a man puts his shoes on in the morning is the beginning of wisdom. And these materials tell us how communities over centuries put their shoes on in the morning, how they fed their children, how they took care of their daily affairs, how they worked, how they played, how the children were educated. It tells us how the affairs of the community were organized in so many different ways. In one of the autobiographies, this young girl writes about the first movie that she ever saw in her life. And it was playing in the Jewish theater in Vilna. And this was 1932. And it was not a Shalom Aleichem. It wasn't a Yiddish fairy tale. It was the silent film of Uncle Tom's Cabin.
Huh.
Now, when you think about that, it tells you so much about what's going on in that Jewish world that they are interested in what's happening in race relations in the United States.
That's amazing. Yeah, that's really something, isn't it? Really
remarkable encounters.
Yeah, remarkable encounters indeed. And I understand that people from more than 100 countries have accessed these archives, including writers and filmmakers looking to breathe new life into these works of literature. What does that say about the work you all have done here? I mean, it's really impressive.
It says that there is a deep, 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 longstanding need to reconnect with their own genuine heritage of people of Ashkenazi descent around the world. And Jews of Ashkenazi descent, that is from the lands of Russia, Poland, Germany, and so forth, dispersed to everywhere in the world. So our materials are being accessed by 130 countries around the world.
Wow.
Uganda, for instance, China, the Middle East, all of Europe. And what it means is that there is this huge need, but also people for all these years really haven't known what their heritage truly was. And I can tell you, I grew up in a fairly well-educated family in Chicago, Illinois. I went to some good colleges. And yet when I find out on almost a daily basis information from these archives, I'm astounded at my own ignorance.
Hmm.
My own ignorance that was based on what? On reading Hannah Arendt, for instance,
right,
or on reading Irving Howe, or on reading Lionel Trilling, important writers who shaped the opinions of generations, and they knew nothing, or close to nothing, about how Jews actually lived.
So give me one more example, because I know these archives are so vast.
Okay, another one. I grew up, as so many in my generation did, of the post-war generation, with the idea that Jews and nature really didn't mix, that Jews were an urban people. They didn't go out in the countryside. They didn't know what plant names were. There are all kinds of documents about the summer camps and about the discovery of Jews who go out into the countryside and experience the wonders of the natural world. And in fact, I read that in more than one place, that Jews didn't know what the names of plants were, or birds, for instance. And here we have the copybooks, the school books of children in their schools, drawing beautiful, precise drawings of plants, naming every part of a plant, drawing anatomical pictures of giraffes, of elephants, of horses, of human beings, naming every bone. And every name was in Yiddish.
Hmm.
The language was not just a language, and the culture was not just a language or a culture of jokes, of off-color humor, of sarcastic comments, as it was handed down to so many of us who grew up in the United States after the war.
I see, yeah.
It was a language of real communication.
So speaking of the Yiddish language, I'd love it if you could explain a little bit about the translation efforts that you've undertaken at YIVO.
I know, and most everybody knows, that the majority of American Jews certainly cannot read or write Yiddish. Many of them have a very hard time with Hebrew. They don't know German, Polish, Russian, Ukrainian, certainly Romanian. And therefore, as wonderful as this is, you put it up on the screen, it's just a piece of paper with marks on
right.
it. And therefore, what we are doing with our online museum, which is a offshoot of this digitization project, is to take particular documents that are curated by scholars and create narratives out of them by bringing together a bunch of associated materials that tell a story. And we are translating then all of those documents into English so people can actually read these materials.
Well, that's great. And that may well be the answer to this last question I wanted to ask you. But now that this expansive archive about the past and Jewish people and culture is available, what lesson do you hope that it can carry forward?
The diversity of this people, the fact that this people was a civilization that did not conform to any stereotype, either those imposed by the anti-Semites on the people or the stereotypes that the people had of themselves.
Well, that's Jonathan Brent. He's executive director of the YIVO Institute of Jewish Research and a professor at Bard College. Jonathan Brent, thanks so much for joining us today. I really appreciated this conversation.
Thanks so much.